TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I don't know what's going on, but you're looking a little blue today.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. That's just the filter that I have on. Sorry, I was just trying out, you know, these new Zoom filters, and I don't know what... Do you think I could pull off Andorian?
I think so. I thought you were getting ready to try to slip into like an Andorian nightclub or something, see if you could blend in.
I have always had a thing for Andorian women, so I guess you've caught me red-handed, Chris. This is awkward.
I guess so. Although I have to say, those antenna you got on, those look like the ones from Journey to Babel. I don't think anyone's going to buy that.
Dang it.
All right, everyone, we're going to continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise today with Proving Ground. It is the 13th episode of Season 3, and here's a quick rundown of the story. An old man once said, "It's dangerous to go alone." That's something the crew of the Enterprise has learned to be true as they've pursued the Zindi weapon. Luckily, a helping hand is on the way. A blue one. It's been a long time since Archer last crossed paths with Shran, but when the Andorian commander shows up in the Expanse, he's glad to see him. Even if the Andorian agenda may not really be to save the Pinkskins, the assist is still appreciated. The sabotage? Not so much. So, Matthew, it's interesting as we head into the second half of the season, because this episode really catches you up on all the stuff that has happened up to this point that's put humans on edge, the Zindi wanting to destroy Earth and so forth. And then it really shoves us into the action. And luckily, we get a little bit of help as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those episodes, I think, where they knew that they kind of needed to establish a few different things. And a lot of this is going to be setting us up towards looking to what we're going to do, you know, in the finale with the Zindi story specifically, you know, not Nazi aliens. That's different. Mm-hmm. So I think there's the need to set the stage of like, okay, where are we in this mission, right?
Yeah, right, right.
And so this episode is going to do that by giving us an understanding of where things are with the Zindi and their weapon, but also kind of where are some of the relationships with species back home. And if we are able to save ourselves, what is it going to look like when we get back?
Right, right. So that for me is the key part of the episode, really. I mean, it's Shran showing up. It's one of the best shots in all of Star Trek, really, for me, that moment where Archer is looking at the view screen and the little Shran's antenna pop up behind his head. It's just such a perfect framing. And I also thought it was effective in bringing them in here because it's been a long while since we've seen them. And we remember how things, certainly our memory is jogged, first time watching this, when the Andorians show up, our memory is jogged about the past encounters that we had, especially back in season one. And of course, as viewers, we know that eventually the Andorians play a key role in the founding of the Federation.
Right.
And we're all hoping, especially when this series was originally on and we were thinking that we would get 7 years of it, like we did with the other modern series, we're, you know, wondering how are they going to get us to that point where the Federation comes together. And so bringing the Andorians back in here, I thought it was obviously something that they needed to do at some point. And this was a clever way to make it happen in a way that was consequential for the relationships that would actually propel humans and Andorians in particular to go on and try to work together in the future, although we've got a few obstacles to get us there. But rather than just having it kind of like figuring out how to make it work later on, having someone like Shran come to the rescue, and even if he has ulterior motives here, or the Andorians do. And Shran in particular, I think, being a character we're familiar with, being the one that comes here, being someone that does ultimately seem to care about relationships and not just military strategy, even the orders that he's being given. I think all that comes together here really sets up the story well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, having the Andorians here is really interesting. One, because of the way in which this budding relationship between these two species is being handled. But I think what's also really interesting, right, is the way in which the Andorian-Vulcan conflict, there is a way in which it's mirroring this Zindi and human conflict, which is that they're ratcheting up the tension because they may or may not be believing lies about the other side that may or may not be true, right? And so the reason that the Andorians are here is that they're trying to get the Zindi weapon so that they would have a deterrent, right? They're legitimately looking for nuclear deterrents, right? Mutually assured destruction. You know, they are trying to do the thing that we find ourselves in the world now, which is, hey, if we've got a big enough stick, nobody's going to want to mess with us because it's going to be over for everyone then. And I think that that's really interesting because the episode is actually working on a lot of different levels, and it's showing, I think, how easy it can be to fall into these patterns of behavior, and the Vulcans and the Andorians are just as guilty of that right now as the humans and the Zindi are. And what's more interesting about that is just that, like, the humans and the Zindi don't actually realize that they're both just being played.
Right.
You know, the Andorians and the Vulcans are doing this to themselves, but in some ways they also in the future will learn that there's a malevolent force behind that, which is the, you know, Romulan faction of the Vulcans. So I just think that that's really interesting because, especially in hindsight, this episode is really doing a lot that we didn't realize when we first watched it. But now that we're doing this anniversary rewatch, we can actually see all the things that they're building in this episode, which, man, it's great stuff.
Well, it was nice to rekindle that Vulcan-Andorian conflict because that was such a key part of the first encounter that we had with Shran and with Andorians in season one. And I always liked it because you have the three main races that found the Federation: humans, Vulcans, and Andorians. And the fact that the Vulcans and the Andorians have this long-running conflict and distrust of one another, it makes it interesting that they ultimately work together with the help of humans, you know, to come together and form this alliance. But also, here the only Vulcan representative that we have is T'Pol. But she's changed so much since the last time Shran saw her. So I think that makes that dynamic a little bit interesting. But still, being Vulcan, she doesn't trust the Andorians.
Right.
And she's still trying to really warn Archer about that.
Well, and I think that that's a really good point. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I wonder if the experience that Shran has with T'Pol, seeing how different she has become because of her time with humans, whether that impacts his decision in the end, right?
Well, yeah, because he can see, I mean, he can see a case of human influence having what maybe he perceives as a positive impact on someone.
Well, and in some ways, I think what it does, right, again, this is the beauty of this episode, and then where Manny Coto takes it in the fourth season, is that he's utilizing, because he's here at this point in this season, and he's utilizing these things later on. And what we're going to see is that in the end, Vulcans and Andorians need humanity to help bridge the gap between them.
Yeah.
Right? And neither of them would say that's the case, but that's the truth of the matter. And I think that's something that is really interesting. And it begins here with Shran being confronted by the fact that a character to which, you know, he never probably would have gotten along with or really liked or whatnot. And to Paul, he can see the change that has happened in her. The fact that she would abdicate her role in the Vulcan military and be here with humanity shows just how much she's changed. So, yeah, I think that's, you know, it's good storytelling, and it's the type of stuff that, you know, a lot of people, I don't think, especially at the time, did not give Enterprise credit for the depth of the writing and what they were doing.
For sure.
But as we look back at this, I mean, it's like it does leave that hole in your heart, right? Where it's like, oh my gosh, if we had just gotten three more seasons, can you imagine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the time it wasn't appreciated, I would say. You know, it's interesting to see how high the ratings for this show are now. If you go somewhere like Rotten Tomatoes and you see how fans have taken to Enterprise.
Yeah.
In some ways, I think, like, you know, DS9 was the same way. Like, the style of writing was just a little bit ahead of where viewers were in terms of how TV was being made at the time, I feel, especially for Star Trek. And it's just something that now feels right and feels natural, the way these characters are interacting with one another. And makes it, people appreciate it a lot more now.
Well, and I think the fun part about this episode, too, is that it is setting up the future. But I love how this episode shows that Vulcans and Andorians and humans can all work together. But specifically, I think it does a great job of showing the way in which Andorians and humanity have so much in common.
Yeah.
Andorians have probably an even more heightened sense of emotional volatility than we humans do, but we understand one another, right? And what we see throughout this episode is that when they're trying to work together, they actually can do it really well. And it makes you really like the Andorians. I mean, I am just constantly astounded at the level of craft that just went into the creation of the Andorians on this show, and how good they look, and I am very sad that we just don't see more of that in more modern Trek, because if they can do that here, I mean, I can't imagine what they could do now. So I love the Andorians in this show.
Yeah, we do see Andorians in the future in Discovery when they jump to the 31st century. And, you know, they're okay, and they've been on Lower Decks. I mean, there's one
Lower Decks recurring character. Yeah, Lower Decks is totally different, though.
On there. But I've never seen them do anything with the Andorians that matches what they did on Enterprise in terms of actually making them feel like a real race that's, you know, equal to the humans. Great. And the Vulcans that we get in season 4, when we learn a lot more about the Vulcans, that they really, and like what they did on DS9 with the Cardassians, for example, you know, they really are fleshing out a race, and they really brought the Andorians to life here. And they don't look like gimmicky aliens that you have seen in Star Trek sometimes in the past, that especially, you know, the Andorian, I mentioned Journey to Babel earlier.
Right.
Obviously, the Andorians look a bit crazy in that, but it's fine because it was makeup from the late 60s. But no, they're so good here. And of course, the fact that they had Jeffrey Combs come play Shran made a world of difference, because he's just so good in every role that he plays. But, you know, it's not just him. I think that Molly Brink playing Talis here is really good. Her interactions with Reed are really good.
And I agree.
Again, you know, she feels like a real person, not like someone who they painted blue because they need to have another Andorian interacting with the crew or anything here. So yeah, it's really well done. And like you say about the similarity in humans and Andorians, like if you have emotional outbursts, or, you know, if you're like humans, prone sometimes to getting angry or being violent or reacting strongly to something, the Andorians are the same way. Yeah, they can understand what the difference is, I think, between them and the Vulcans that we see in the first three seasons of Enterprise, is that the Andorians can anticipate how humans might respond to something in a way that the Vulcans don't, because the Vulcans are kind of confused. Why do the humans get so upset about something? You know, why are they bothered that we're holding them back 100 years?
Right. Yeah.
Because we don't live as long as you do. So we need to do stuff. We need to get it done. But, you know, later on, of course, we'll see, we'll learn a lot more about why the Vulcans are that way. But like you said at the beginning, essentially the ceiling is much higher for the human Andorian relationship to be successful.
Yeah.
At this point. And,
well, I mean,
setting that up here so that it can play out through the rest of the story is a really nice element.
And I mean, you mentioned the great relationship between Talos and Reed, right? And there is, I mm-hmm. think, a true flirtation that's kind of happening there. I don't think that's just put on. And in that sense, kind of seeing that, you know, as different species here, we're not that different, you know, and so that we can work together shows, I think, that we should be working together. We shouldn't be fighting one another. We should be on the same team. And I think there's something really kind of beautiful about that in the episode, mm-hmm. because, you know, obviously that's the way it ends, and we'll get there. But
is it troubling to you that Andorians are blue, their ale is blue, and their blood is blue? So like their favorite alcoholic beverage is the same color as their blood.
You know their favorite song, Chris? I'm Mr. Blue. Do, 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 do. When you say you're sorry. Do, 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 do. Anyway, yeah. So that's Shran's favorite song.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, I do think that is funny. Maybe they're colorblind to the color blue. Oh, they don't realize everything's blue.
Well, it's possible that they're not actually colorblind, but they feel that way because they've just made everything blue. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And as I pointed out before we started recording, when you go shopping for jeans, you have to be really careful what shade of denim you buy. Otherwise, people might think you're not wearing it.
Yeah, you need the real dark denim, you know. So, what did you think about us? You know, we talked about the idea that this is in the middle of the season and we're kind of setting the stage for the end. What did you think about the way in which then we used the Zindi? This is the proving ground. This is Bikini Atoll. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you feel like that actually worked, especially with us being in the rewatch?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it worked really well because the whole idea, and you brought it up earlier, of nuclear proliferation. It's interesting how this story works then and now. But before I say that, just going back to the origins of the season, which were the 9/11 attacks on the US, and then all the concern about, oh, well, you know, maybe Saddam Hussein is developing, even though it wasn't Iraq who carried out those attacks, but maybe he's developing weapons of mass destruction, all of that made a lot of sense for this story of there's this location where they're testing their weapons in secret and we've got to find it. We've got to go there. The nuclear proliferation thing, which I think is maybe more apt here because of the Andorians wanting to get their hands on this weapon as a deterrent to the Vulcans, which is a complete parallel to nuclear weapons on Earth. At the time, we had been through the Cold War standoff between the U.S. and the Soviet Union with their nuclear arsenals. I think a few years before this, maybe 2 years or so before this, was when India and Pakistan were developing nuclear weapons and kind of that was getting a little bit dicey. And since then, we have more nations. Of course, there's North Korea. Iran, allegedly, you know, all this stuff's going on. And now today, we're seeing that Europe may decide to develop, you know, more countries may decide to develop nuclear weapons if they can't rely on the U.S. So the world could get far more dangerous. But I think that, you know, this all comes down to the idea of DEGRA, and we'll talk about this more in the next episode, I'm sure, that DEGRA is essentially becoming the Oppenheimer character who is developing a weapon that will kill millions and millions of people, which in our real world was the atom bomb. And so you've got this overall theme running on many different levels here of weapons of mass destruction, of nuclear weapons, of needing to develop them in secret and test them in secret.
Yeah.
And the other side trying to find out what you're doing. And since the whole premise of the mission is based on the idea that the Zindi are developing a bigger weapon than the one that they've already used against Earth, having this, especially the location of the story right in the middle of the season, I think it's important for the story, and I think it gives a lot of energy to the story to really refocus everyone watching on where we are in the story, like you said earlier, and then like propel us into the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything here with the Zindi is really well thought out, you know, and even just showing the ways in which the Zindi Council is getting antsy about it, the time that this is taking, that it seems to be taking too much time. You know, again, that does really mirror the experience of when they were trying to create the atom bomb and the...
Because there was a clock on that, right? Like you have to, I'm not saying it was right or wrong to create it or use it or anything, but in the moment for them, there was a clock on that.
Yes,
we either do this or maybe we will be destroyed.
Well, and the other part of that, right, is that the intelligence of knowing what Germany at that point is creating, right? We know they're creating the rockets, they're creating the jets, you know, and if they're allowed to continue, it could get really, really messy, really, really fast. And so all of that together, I mean, I think that the Star Trek, when it's at its best, right, it is utilizing our history to create stories that are compelling and help us think about our own history and where we are and all that kind of stuff. And I love it. And I think this is really well done. And so to see this play out, and what I love too is that, you know, we'll talk about this next time, but obviously the way in which it plays directly into the next episode. And so we get a chance to spend a little bit more time with this character, DEGRA, who is the architect of this doom, right? And I think that's a really smart idea as well, because we know this is a rewatch. We know how important he's going to become to the rest of the season as well. And that's something that I really enjoy, that it feels plotted well, right? When we think about what's coming and where we're going. And so, I think the utilization of this is the opportunity to show us just how close the Zindi are getting and how much, you know, when we talk about the doomsday clock being at a certain time, like for Earth, the doomsday clock is like at 11:45 p.m. right now, you know, if not maybe right more now, like 11:50.
No, right now it's not. So, it was in the news the other day. It's 9 seconds.
Oh, no. I'm talking about for humanity in the 22nd century.
Oh, in the 22nd century, yeah, you might be right there.
Yeah, it's like 11:55 or something, you know, whatever. So
yeah, the doomsday clock, yeah, in this situation wouldn't apply probably because it's not humans trying to destroy themselves.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, you get the reference.
I know what you mean. Yeah, we're getting close. It's not at 15 minutes. It's at 11 episodes, I think. That's what it is.
Yeah,
for
there
the
we
humans,
go.
The doomsday. Yep.
So yeah, it's,
the doomsday.
It's coming clock. Soon.
So, and it, you mentioned the plotting. I think that's very evident here. I always say, if you're going to watch season 3 of Enterprise, you should watch it pretty quickly. Watch one episode every day or a couple of days, and it becomes evident that the season is plotted really well. Whereas when you watched it in first run, and the reason why it was less popular in first run, I think, is that that gap between episodes, when you're watching the story unfold, you lose the energy in the plotting of the story. Whereas, but it's plotted like a modern TV show, right? Where you would watch it much more quickly. You would binge watch it. And when you do that, it works really well.
Well, and that's something that I experienced with Game of Thrones. You know, everybody else had watched that show and they were waiting, you know, years between seasons or whatever. And then everybody is all up in arms about the end of that show. And watching it back to back to back, it made complete sense to me that this is what happened. This is where the story went. This is where the characters went, because I hadn't had those long, you know, ridiculous spaces between seasons that they tend to do these days, where, you know, fans have nothing but time to figure out what they want to see happen. And when you don't have that opportunity, when you just have the season play before you in quick succession, you don't get that time to like, oh, what would I want, right? You just get what they give you. And if it makes sense and it works well, it works well. And so that was an example of that. What you were talking happened to me in real life, you know, that other people complained about it, but I thought, hey, this is great.
Yeah. Well, you remember on Saddle Up when we started doing season 3, we went into that first episode. We don't even remember what happened at the end of the second season because it had been so long since we knew.
It was ridiculous. And, yes.
Yeah. So let me ask you that. This is sort of a sidebar a little bit, but I was just thinking about it last night, because this episode and the next one and the one after that, most of the star dates, as we would call them in Star Trek, are unknown in season 3. But this is the first of 3 in a row, and actually 5 out of 6 episodes that explicitly tell you what the date is. And this one is December 6th, 2153. And I was just thinking about if you're out in space all the time, the idea that you, and especially when T'Pol talks about it too, because she's Vulcan, the idea that you would maintain the Earth 24-hour day, 7-day week, 30, 31-day month as the way that you keep time feels a bit odd. Because in reality, and they can't do this in Star Trek, but in reality, if you were to travel at the speeds that they travel in Star Trek, time slows down. You know, there's all this time dilation and stuff. So you can't actually ever really keep time like this.
Sure.
And so I think later in Star Trek, when they start with the stardate stuff, even though there is sort of like a calendar-based foundation to that in how they came up with it, it's easier to kind of go, oh, yeah, well, that's a star date. Yeah, that sounds great, because it's not connected with the way we track time. But every time I hear Archer say, you know, it's December 6th, my first thought is, wow, it's just a couple of weeks till Christmas and they're really stressed out. You know,
exactly.
I feel when I hear it.
it's definitely true.
It's like they're trying to save Christmas for everybody on Earth. Come on, guys, we only have 2 weeks to go. We got to stop this indie. Anyway, I guess one last point to talk about here in terms of characters is just, how do you feel about two characters in particular, Archer and Shran, how their relationship is going in this story, knowing Archer's importance to the founding of the Federation later?
Yeah, I mean, I think what is great about this is, you know, these two men find themselves in places that they don't want to be in this episode. You know, Archer doesn't want to be here. He does not want to be in the expanse looking for the Zindi. He wants to be exploring, and he's been thrust into this. And in the same way, Shran is here, and he doesn't want to be here, really. I don't think that he truly wants to be doing this. And I think what's really interesting, and the reason I say that, and the reason I think it's backed up, is that the episode, in the end, the message comes from Shran to Archer with the coordinates that they need, right? Mm-hmm. And he sends him the secret message. And I think that shows that the impact of the relationship between the two has had a large enough impact on both of them to help them see that it would be better for us if we were friends and not enemies.
Mm-hmm. But not secret lovers. I just, what you said was just leading me into song lyrics. I'm like, we're not friends, we're not enemies.
Yes, not that, no. So, and I think that's just, it's something that's just really interesting about this episode, and I really, really like it because, again, I think it does such a great job of setting up everything that's going to come in that fourth season. And it even does a great job of setting up what's going to happen at the end of this season, right? The Andorians are going to play a huge part in that, spoiler alert.
Yeah. And if you look further out, they didn't get to make it, but, you know, there was talk that in season 5, Shran would have actually become a member of the Enterprise crew. So you can see where they're like starting to build towards that here. And one thing I love in this episode is how Shran talks to the Zindi and tells them that he's searching for Archer, right? While that's Archer is fantastic. Standing just so out good. Of you.
So good.
I loved that.
I loved that.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on this one? And what's your rating for Proving Ground?
Yeah, I mean, this is just a great episode of the season. It really moves, and the character moments are fantastic. I love it. And so I think this deserves 5 out of 5 antenna. So,
okay. All right. And that's the Enterprise antenna, not the original series antenna.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Who wants those?
Because those original series ones, they can literally just fall off. Yeah,
it's not worth it, man. You don't want those. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I don't have a lot more to add about this one either that I haven't already said. I think it's a really good episode. I think that the arrival of Jeffrey Combs as a, well, he only appears in a couple of episodes in this season, but then he'll be back for more. I think it really energized the series for me anyway, having him in there. And I'm going to give it 9 pieces of Archerite.
Oh, I like it.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Proving Ground. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll see a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will come back to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not underestimating pink skins, where can people find you?
Oh my goodness, gets me every time. Well, you could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you'll find me in the 602 Club talking about all the franchises outside of Star Trek that we love, so check that out. And over on the Nerd Party Network, I got a couple of shows. One's called Owlpost, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out just what pair of blue jeans is going to go with that new blue skin, where can people find you?
My new blue skin. Well, it has been cold lately, so maybe that's why that has happened. You can, of course, find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you. Larry Nemechek and I have a new episode of The Ready Room out where we look back at season 3 of Strange New Worlds. And you can find me throughout the back catalog on many shows talking about many series, many topics from Star Trek. So check that out if you want to hear my thoughts on many other things. You can also find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere, so I'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, how to get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We could definitely use your help to keep everything going. We don't have ads on our show, so we rely on your support. And thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're ready to, you know, grow your hair out and don't take a shower for a while, and just so you'll fit in next time as we talk about stratagem.
Well, Chris, I've got the hair going, but I am going to take a shower. So let's go.